Welcome to Shadows from the Tree, the podcast that invites you to explore the curious world of dark genealogy, uncovering secrets, scandals, crimes, and darker events that shaped family trees. Whether you're a seasoned genealogist, just beginning to explore your family history, a history buff, or even a crime junkie, we offer something for everyone. Join us, your hosts, Danielle and Michelle, in each episode as we share stories from over a century ago for the first time with each other, centered around a common theme. By using newspaper archives as our guide and conducting research using historical records, we piece together these often forgotten stories and gain a deeper understanding of the challenges those involved faced. Our hope is to connect you, our listeners, with your ancestors' past, one story at a time. All right, Michelle, here
we're
we
back.
Are. We're back. And we are, I will just say, are keeping up with our schedule.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty good this time.
Compared to last season, it was a little bit hot mess, but, but we're doing good.
We're in a groove.
It's good. We're in a groove, yep. We do have a little quick update, which I just wanted to mention. So last week we did a theme of war, and Michelle did a story of Selvin Ballou, who was known for his love letters to his wife, and he died in the Battle of Civil War. And my aunt Barbara, kudos to you. She did some genealogy of our own family, and she found that we are connected, and he would be my aunt's fourth cousin four times removed. So, Michelle, you still found my ancestor.
Yeah. Are you related to everyone in this area?
I mean, our family line's a little strong, I will say.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you're related, I'm related, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You'd be, the fourth cousin, the cousin removed.
Eighth time removed. I don't know how that works.
So it's been pretty cool. And we have this week's theme, which I've grown to love and feel like we could do a whole episode, a whole season on it, actually. And we are doing deathbed confessions. Yeah. And I think...
Really good one. I really liked researching and diving into this one.
Yeah. I can't wait to find out what you did, because I did a little bit more intimate of a piece. And I feel like we first started out wanting to do like family relation secrets kind of.
Yeah.
And so that's how I stumbled upon mine. But then I was seeing things like murders, and I was like, ooh, boy, do I want to dig in? But I'm going to keep to my story.
Yep.
So I can't wait to hear what your story is all about. But I'm going to take you on my journey, because I know I texted you halfway through my research, and I was like, oh, I just don't know. Like, if I have the right, I don't know. I just wasn't feeling confident. But things have changed since then.
Sweet. So. I know you text me. I've unlocked it.
I'm so happy for you. So I'm very happy. And so I'm going to kind of just take you on my like journey, I guess, as like doing genealogy to figure out how I got the story all together. So the first part of the story, again, I was trying to pull keywords, right? So I'm in newspapers.com and I'm typing things like family, whatever. I'm just typing a bunch of surnames. Then I start finding family, and I find this article, and it is titled from an Iowa newspaper, June 1st, 1904. It's headlined, "Long Lost Daughter Finds Her Mother. Was abducted by her father when only 5 years old. A happy reunion at Ackley. Daughter came from California to visit her old home. Was only appraised of story of her life by father's deathbed confession after she was grown."
Wow.
So that's how the deathbed morphed.
Yeah, long time. Wow.
Yep. So that kind of prompted it. And then my story, I am going to read, because it is on the shorter end. So I'm just going to read you what the article says. And I, tried to search after for multiple articles of the same things, but they're generally all similar. So it was Iowa Falls, Indiana. Iowa, May 31st, abducted when 5 years old and finally finding her mother in this county is the strange yet truthful life story of Miss Tandler, who is now visiting her mother at Ackley, from which place she was abducted by the father years ago. This strange story is one that rivals romance, and the details tell the tale of unusual incidents. Years ago, they lived at Ackley in this county, a family by the name of Ivins. Domestic troubles arose, and in a fit of anger, the father and husband left home, his whereabouts for a long time being a mystery. Left alone, the mother undertook the duty of rearing her family. Unknown to anyone in the town, the father returned one day and, stealing the five-year-old daughter, as mysteriously disappeared. The father and daughter were traced by traced to Marshalltown, where all traces of them were lost. Years rolled by, and the bereaved mother mourned the loss of her child. Later, a divorce was secured, and the mother married her present name, being Miss F. Hygunda. It remains for a deathbed confession to right the wrong done to the family, and far away on the Pacific coast, the father, realizing that his final end was near, confessed to the grown daughter that years ago he had stolen her from her mother. The daughter had grown to womanhood, the secret of her mother identity being closely guarded by her father. The daughter finally married, and when the deathbed forced from the lips of the father the secret of her early life, she undertook to learn, if possible, the whereabouts of her mother. She faintly remembered. A year or so ago, officials at Ackley received letters of inquiry, the writer asking if people by the name of Ibans still resided there. As the writer recalled the name of Ackley as the trading place of the family of which she was a member when she was a mere child, older residents recall the family in the quarrel and the abduction of the child. Correspondence following and the mother and daughter rearing about there might be a possible mistake, decided on a meeting to put an end to all the doubt, and they were reunited after years of cruel separation. The present reunion at the home of Miss Hygunda, in which Miss Tandler and her several children are happy participants, following as a sequel to the restoration of the long-lost child to her mother and the recital of the life story of the principals related incidents that gave the light and shadows to the strange tale of romance plucked from the pages of a story from real life. So that was what I found.
Wow.
And then I didn't really find anything else. in your story or your research, what would your next step be?
I'd look up like birth certificates and the vital records part. That's usually where I go.
Yeah. So I just started pulling out keywords. The last names, the town. I try to give like a rough idea of what a possible date could be, going back from like, you know, this woman's out in adulthood, she was five, to get like a time period. So I kind of got those keywords and I put what I could into Ancestry and there wasn't anything. So I was like, okay, I only have last names. So then I decided to go over to the Ackley Public Library, had all of their newspapers digitalized, so from 1872 to 2019.
Oh, great.
So a free resource for anyone out there. You don't have to pay. And I just started, I mean, I probably was like on this for like an hour, like just typing in anything I could, Tandler, this, that, nothing. So finally I hit something that matched by typing in the words married Hygunda, and that revealed like three, you know, items down, an obituary from May 12, 1938, and it reads, Miss Meta Hygunda. Many years a resident of Ackley, died at the age of 91. Death recently claimed one of the oldest residents of Ackley when Miss Meta Lindbergh Hygunda passed away at her home on April 25th at the age of 91. Age of 91 years, 1 month, and 28 days, to be specific. She was born February 27, 1847, in Grimsum, East Friesland, Germany. In 1870, she came to America, living for about a year near Oregon, Illinois, then moving to Ackley, residing in the near vicinity of the town until her passing. She was united in marriage to Anton Teoden, I believe it's T-J-A-D-E-N. So she was married. They, their home was blessed with four children, three of whom preceded her in death. In 1884, she was married to Folkart Hygunda. After remaining about a year on a farm, they moved into the home from which she recently departed. Mr. Hygunda died in September 1916, and since that time her brother Jacob Lindbergh made his home with her there. Funeral services were conducted at the home on Thursday, April 28th, led by Reverend Henry Johnson and attended by her immediate relatives and family. Interment was made in Oakwood Cemetery. So I'm reading this and I'm like, like that last name's not the family name I read in the article. She had more children. So I'm, you know, my mind's just like, what's going on? So then I get to this last paragraph. Those surviving her are only her only daughter, Miss Minnie Tandler, living in Escada, Oregon. One sister, Miss Elizabeth Surcharge of Clarksville, Iowa, her brother Jacob, 8 grandchildren, a number of great-grandchildren, and other relatives. Because of the serious illness of her husband, Miss Tandler could not come to the funeral of her mother, but two of her daughters attended. So, at first I was like, oh, I have the wrong person, this doesn't really match. And then I get to the Miss Minnie Tandler. So I'm like,
yeah, that's her.
That's the last name in the article. So I'm like, okay, I'm on to something. So plug more information into Ancestry, the mother's name, the daughter's, you know, first name, the first husband. I get all of that. So I get a little momentum going, right? I'm like, okay, let's just keep going. So then I get a few of the censuses up. So in 1880, they were living in Pleasant Valley, Iowa. Both of the parents, so Anton and Meta, which she actually went by Maddie in a lot of the records, they were from Prussia. Is what they were listed as. And so that has their first, the first census I could find, and it's all of the family so far. So it's Anton, it's Meta, Minnie, John, and Jacob as the two other sons, who obviously passed since the mother had passed. So I found that. So I was like, okay, let's keep going. Then I find the next thing is 1885 in Hardin, Ackley, was just her by herself, and it had listed her as divorced. So I'm like, that matches that article that said she had gotten divorced, whatever. Right. 1900, she's living with her now new husband, Hygunda. And it said, children born 5, children living 0. Aww. So, but then, so 1900, next census 1910, she now has born 5 children, living 1. So between 1900 and 1910, she knows she now has her daughter back.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sweet and humbling. And then in 1920, 1925, 1930, she is living with her brother Jake or Jacob as the head of house in Hardin, Iowa. So it's the same area. And so then I start also looking on Find a Grave, and I can't find anything about the other siblings who passed, which is still bothering me, but I'll let that one go. And then on Find a Grave also, like, no one's, like, fully connected. So, like, on Anton's, it doesn't show that his first wife was Maddie and, you know, so it's a little all over the place. But here we go. This is the part that I was so excited about. So I, of course, was, like, looking at a family tree that someone had the same name in it, and there was a photo attached to it that had the article of the missing, like, the kidnapped child. Because up until this point, I still wasn't sold that I had the right family. I was like, I don't know, there's a lot of names out there, like, you know. So I was like, okay, this is good. So then I sent a message like I normally like to do, because, you know, we're a community here in the genealogy. And she wrote back saying that she's not related, but she was helping a friend who was writing a story on this person. And she sent me the link. I was like, yes, this is amazing. So it was published in September of 2019, in the Quarterly Magazine of the Genealogical Forum of Oregon. And not only was this like a confirming moment that I actually done a pretty good job so far finding these people. It was that I got more information, more on like folk law and more present day information, and then also a photo.
Yay.
A fourth generation photo of Maddie, Minnie. Aww. So they reunite, you know, it's a photo of them together now. And then Minnie's daughter, and then another daughter.
Oh, wow.
Her daughter. So let me just show you. And it's funny because I had a vision of Minnie in my head. I can't even describe it. But then I saw the pictures like, oh, that's not what I was thinking. So that would be Maddie, Minnie, daughter. And then there's another granddaughter.
That's a great picture.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? So that was just.
What year was that picture?
That was, it doesn't say, but I'm assuming it was after 19, I want to say 19, between 1902 and 19, what do I have it here? Like 1909, they met, because that's the gap. So before 1910.
Right.
I'm assuming. So, all right. And I'm just going to read this because I was like, this is such a great thing to have in your family, like something left over, tangible. Mm-hmm. So the person who published this article actually met with the great granddaughter of Maddie. And she had an original letter that Minnie wrote to Maddie. So it was March 30, 1902, Grimsom, Oregon. And this really gives a view into like the pivotal moment when she no longer could be with her mom and what her life was like growing up, which is quite sad. So it says, "Dear Mother, I received your letter and you don't know how happy I was to hear from you. But in all those years, my father made me tell everyone that my mother was dead. But I can still remember how he took me away from Iowa. Took me to have such an unhappy and lonely life. Many a thousand times have I thought of my mother, and I guess mother has thought of me too. I know, so sad. I will write you some of my past life, for I think you would like to know. After we left Iowa, he took me away in a buggy to a place called Marshalltown, and from there to Denver. I went by the name of Minnie Miller. He worked in a brickyard for a while at Denver. I was at some boarding house first in one place and then in another, always strangers, and from there we next went to Kansas for a short time. And there he got married, and then he went back to Colorado again. We lived there for a short time, and then he left this woman and came to Portland and then changed my name to Minnie Smith, which name I always went by. I was about 8 years old when we came to Portland, and then I had to keep house for him. He thought I'd ought to keep house as good as a woman. I never had anyone to show me or learn how to cook. What a many times I cry and wish that I had a mother around like the other girls. I kept house for a while and then went to Salem, which is 60 miles from Portland. There he worked on a farm and I worked around for my board. We stayed there till I was 11 when I had that picture taken that was sent back to Iowa 17 years ago. And then he went back to Portland and he got a job in a sawmill where he worked for 4 years. And then I had to keep house again and go to school. And on Sunday when he was home, he would find some little things to scold me about all day. And I was so unhappy. It was then that I was about 15 years, he got married again, and they lived together about 5 weeks, and then she left him. And then in about a year, he got married again, and this woman lived 6 weeks with him and left him. So he has been married 3 times out here. He could not get along with anyone. He had such a bad temper, and he would get mad at almost nothing. The last time he got married, that woman spent all of his money, and after
serves him right.
I know. And after that, he drove an express wagon, and at that, he could not enough to buy his horse feed, and then I had to go make a living for him. I then got a place in a minister's family and got $20. I worked there 2 years, and on payday, he would come and get my money to take to a woman to go to the theater with. When I was 19, I got married to a Swiss man who is now a very good and kind husband. It will be 10 years, the 22nd of next September, and I got married and have 5 children, 3 girls and 2 boys. Their names are Ida, Minnie, Rosa, Benny, and Henry. The oldest is 8, and the youngest is 10 months. It will be 8 years, the 7th of April, that my father died of heart disease, very sudden, only sick for 6 hours. When I was first married, we lived on a farm 10 miles east of Portland and half a mile from a little town of Gresham, where my 2 girls go to school. I want my mother to send me her picture as I cannot remember how she looked. I will send her my picture. I will have my husband to write her in some German. I would like to know how old my mother is and my grandmother's age. Maybe in a few years from now, if we all keep well, I may come out there for a visit, which I would love to do. When you see the marshal, will you please tell him that I thank him for his kindness for finding my mother for me? Ever your loving daughter, Wilhelmina. The children all send a kiss to their grandma, Miss B. Tandler." So, that just really from her own words, right, painted a picture of her life.
How that went not so great.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to think, like, what was the father's MO? Like, to get back at the mother?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Or to be like, I need someone to take care of me. I want to make my daughter do it.
5 years old, she's not going to be doing much taking care of anyone for a while. But
did he really care? Like, those are the unanswered questions that just, like, we will never know. But, I mean, obviously, he probably carried some guilt if he's saying that on his deathbed.
Yeah.
You know?
Awful that he did that to her.
I know. So all in all, like, in the article there also was the oral history from the great grandchild June, who actually still had a doll, and also show you the picture here, the doll that her great grandmother had given her mom, so that she still had that in the family.
That's so cute.
I know. And she kind of told somewhat of a similar story, you know, a couple little things don't really all match to what the article and the letter. So it's all a little still, like, you got to piece it all together. But it was really, a thing where wasn't a huge story, but, like, I'm sure this level of deathbed confessions probably happened more often than not. Like, it didn't get to go to court or anything crazy, but this is just, like, an example of something that might have happened often.
In the early 1900s, people could disappear and just change their name and start over fresh and make up whatever story they wanted about their life. And
exactly. No one questioned it, right?
Right. Does that happen now? No. Really, no. You have, like, this digital footprint.
Oh, yeah,
like,
no.
You can't hide anything.
Oh, yeah, no, you can't. and even for people. Yes.
There's
for people who do DNA tests now, like, it unlocks their past ancestors, just some shady stuff, which, you know, I know that's what makes people somewhat hesitant, but at the same time, it's, you know, shouldn't be doing shady things.
Yeah, those paternity Maury
shows. It's so true. And this poor mom's, like, thinking her kid's dead.
She only had the one child, like, he didn't take.
And that one census, what year did I say that was? She said, in 1900, she had zero children living.
Yeah.
So I don't know when, because there's two other children living on the 1880 census. So I don't know if more, you know, passed before 1880. I mean, they came here in 1870.
Yeah.
Or, like, how soon after did he take her? Did they have another child in between then? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything really as far as, like, headstones or anything about what happened to them. So, but the dad, he died at 49 of heart disease in Oregon, 1894. And, you know, so I'm guessing about eight years between when she found out that her mom was still kind of living to when she actually corresponded with her. And then she got to live, Minnie and Maddie got to have a relationship for 34 more years because she lived until she was 91. So
that's great.
At least she could make up, you know, there.
And have some kind of bond and kind of have that older woman telling her.
Yeah. But it just, like, reminds us that, you know, these story like this, it's just the unbreakable tie between a mom and, you know, your children. It's, you know, that desire to reconnect with our lost ones and, you know, now it's a little bit easier, like we saw with the digital footprint, but back then, it wasn't likely to happen. So in this case, it's a good thing she did. And it sounds like she was a good mother. I found it was like a rabbit hole I could have gone down, where I believe she was kind of going to court for her daughter in place of her daughter, because she claimed the teacher had, like, physical aggression against the daughter. And it was like going to court. I was like, oh, okay, it's interesting, but I didn't quite follow it. And then there may have been a little side story where Minnie's husband, Benjamin, might have been, like, working for a milk farm and, like, watering down the milk because there was, like, charges of court or something for that. So I don't know.
How dare they?
Watering it down too much that... You know, so anyway.
He's just making skim milk.
Exactly.
He was ahead of his time.
So, I don't know. I didn't quite go put myself there, but So for me, this story, it wasn't like a total shocker, but it was like, it was the getting there that I could actually piece it together with what I felt was
your
not a lot of great.
Work was on point.
Thank you. And then to honestly finding that connection with someone who wrote a story with one of the ancestors. And one of the June, she, the great granddaughter, even had something in there saying that like she was told by a gypsy that she was going to reunite with someone in 1900, like there was a date and everything.
I love that.
So, you know. Anyways, but yeah, so that's my story and I can't wait. I hope you say you found a deathbed murder conviction. Did you?
No.
Ah!
Wasn't murder. No.
I found a few of those, but I was like, I'm not.
Well, we were staying with family.
Okay.
So
ooh, okay. So you found one. Because I struggled
family.
To find one. Okay.
Oh, this was a, all right.
I'm so ready.
Crack my knuckles on this one. All right. So same time era. You know, I love my 1880s, 1900. Bring it on. But I don't know. The newspapers were just so detailed in
they
that
were.
Time era. Yeah, I can picture it. I can see the movie play in my head of this one specifically. So I was looking deathbed confession specifically in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut.
Nice.
I like staying local.
Yeah.
I feel like
you know where the records are now. You can go quickly. Yeah,
there's more ties too because sometimes you know, like we just dig ourselves and we'll do. You bump into your own family. So
love that.
I found this one. It was a father's deathbed confession to his son.
Mm.
So he says.
Oh.
So we're gonna talk about Levi, quote Doc Wilson.
Okay. Your people always have like nicknames.
Yeah, there's some kind of alter ego to them. So Doc Wilson, he's referred to in a lot of the articles, had come from, you know, meager start. His family, his parents on record had several children. 11 names were on the records. He was right in the middle of that 11. When I looked at the like records, all of his siblings were born in Connecticut, but he was the only one born in Oxford, which is like the Worcester area of Mass. So we're just gonna drop
plausible
that in there because all right, so this part of the article, it says this was in the Boston Globe. We're gonna go back to December 2nd of 1886.
Okay.
So we're going to say, Doc Wilson was seen this morning, and he talked freely regarding his trouble. And then, to the surprise of those who were present, he said, "My God, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of being pointed at as a blackmailer and thief. Ooh. I have kept this matter between Moen and myself secret for 17 years, but it has got to come out. And for the first time in my life, I will reveal it. I am Philip Moen's son." We'll get to who Philip Moen is in a second. "He is my father. Although that was no credit to me, I am not proud of it by any means. Here, I will show you the letters which I have in my possession, which I have never used in or out of court. Read this. What does it say in the handwriting and signed by Philip Moen? It reads, "My dear son," and is addressed to me by my father, Philip Moen. The man who is supposed to be my father, Jonas Wilson, drove a stage line between Danielson and Willimantic, Connecticut. He died in 1870. Just previous to his death, he experienced religion and had a desire to relieve his mind and die with a clear conscience. He called me to his side at his deathbed and made the wonderful revelation before myself and my supposed mother that I was not his son, but the son of Philip Moen. I was then 17 years of age, and after my father was buried, I sought out Philip Moen, my own father, and accounted with him with the facts, and he acknowledged that it was true and begged me to keep the secret between me on account that his marriage with my stepmother, Maria. This I promised to do, but in order to keep other parties quiet, I was obliged to keep paying them large amounts. The more I paid them, the more... I had to.
Oh, no.
So, that's...
Oh, the poor kid.
Okay, sure.
Oh, no, you have more info. Oh, no.
Okay, so we're going to go to who Philip Moen is, actually.
Okay.
So, Philip Moen, he was considered the barbed wire king. So not only did they make barbed wire, which he has this patent. Look at, he has.
Oh, wow.
He has this Washburn and Moen manufacturing company. He had many buildings where they manufactured different kinds of wire for pianos, for hoop skirts, for barbed wire. So he started, he actually married into this industry. His father-in-law was Ichabod Washburn.
Ooh, cool name.
Right? he actually funded a college, and their logo is called the Ichabods.
Because, oh, cool. Yeah,
so just a little side note on that one. But
so they were, I'm assuming, wealthy. This made them good money.
Yeah, they're millionaires. Yeah. They're like a really well-known family in the Worcester area. Here's Philip.
Ooh, yes.
I'll show you. This is his younger years. So
He
looks like, you know, in the Abe Lincoln.
Love the beard and the, yeah.
And this is Levi Wilson.
So those are set. Those were set to be.
Yep. This is father, yeah. Philip, and this is supposed son. Okay. Yeah. And then look at the, the monument.
Oh my goodness.
The Washburn Moen monuments are like. There's
like a whole entryway.
Yeah, we'll have to put that online. It's crazy. So Philip was married young. So he was married to the Washburn daughter. Her name was Eliza Ann. And she ended up dying early. This is where I started digging.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's saying like my supposed mother. So some of the articles are like, well, could he be Moen's son? So they were looking for when his first wife died young. So she died actually in 1853. But the records said it was January 5th. So early in 1853, where Levi was born December 1st, 1853. So he was born out of wedlock.
Because
the guy wasn't married again. So it's plausible.
Did the mom know though? Like,
well, she was already dead. Oh, the mom, like his mom who raised
his
him?
His birth mom. Yeah, like the person who gave birth. Like, was it like a whoopsie? I don't know who this he belongs to. Like,
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
That's crazy.
I don't know how he ended up, because I looked at his birth record. It doesn't have a mother's name. It only says Jonas Wilson. And why was he born in Massachusetts?
When everybody else was Connecticut.
Like, in the 1860 census, they were in Brooklyn, Connecticut as a family. And then 1870, they were in Thompson as a family. So they were in Connecticut.
I'm just thinking, imagine, like, because they didn't have access to the records probably that they were reporting. So imagine if the mothers, like, with the census person being like, yeah, and this one was born in Mass. And he writes it down, right? And then the father, like, never saw that record. But at some point, the father must have found out because he's telling the son.
Well, they're saying that. That's why he told him on the deathbed, was because he knew all along, and he was paid off to take the kid from Wilson, because Wilson wanted all of his, like his past wife's inheritance from like the Washburn family. That was the big.
Oh man.
Like, that was supposedly the story of the time. They called Levi the Count of Monte Cristo of Rhode Island, because he like just popped up one day and in Rhode Island, and he had all this money. Nobody knew who he was, where he came from, what he was doing.
Oh my gosh.
Ended up getting over like $800,000 from this Moen guy.
Are you serious?
He would go to the bank, and the first time he went to the bank, you know, with a check from Moen, they were like, who do you think? Like,
yeah, what are you even doing?
What are you doing? And they called Moen, and Moen had a telegraph written. Anytime Levi Wilson comes to the bank, you give him whatever the check says. So he had something, like if it wasn't that he was his illegitimate son, it was something even worse.
Weird.
Because he kept paying this man. And there's trials.
So went to court.
Oh, yeah, because he was just saying that.
Oh, this is messy.
Yeah, Wilson was like, finally, I'm done. Moen is not paying anymore. He's like, you're cleaning me out here. We are done. You're not getting
just getting what anymore. He's owed for not, you know, being there.
Right. So we're going to go to 1881. So there's a hotel that Wilson starts. He built up this hotel. It's called Hotel Wilson. and it's in Uxbridge. So I did a little look at that.
Ooh, Google Map.
And it actually, the name got changed because it got sold a little bit later than that. He didn't stay in that area, but he set it up. He got it all decorated. Oh, he funded it. He got it to be pristine, basically Mr. Moneybags.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Spending his money. But he did help his family.
So he wasn't just keeping it all to
himself.
No, he
was giving it to his brother. Like I said, he had 10 cents. He's giving money out. He's shelling out cash here, there, everywhere. Good. He's making investments. So
he's being smart with the money then.
Somewhat. Oh. But he just keeps getting more. So why does he need to be? He's getting. If he runs out, he's just going back to
the
money bag dad over there mowing and getting more money. So we're going to go and kind of build more character on Levi.
Yeah. I want to see
you still think.
Because you had a little bit of a weird reaction there.
So he was living in, 1870 was when his dad died, right?
Yeah.
So we're jumping to 1876. So he's living with this Hattie Engley. And he's promising, oh, we're going to get married, whatever. He takes a trip with her, and they say they got married, but come to find out, they never actually did. They ended up having two children, but the children didn't live out of, toddler infancy.
Oh,
so,
sad.
Yep. It was pretty sad. So they have him building that hotel after that, and then he ended up getting imprisoned in 1882.
For what?
Because he was for breach of promise to Hattie Engley. So her dad found out because she was mad. She got deserted because he didn't actually marry her. And he ended up
a family together.
Yeah, he ended up going to prison because.
For that, jeez.
Yeah, because he was
pretty strict.
Not really married to her. And he ended up marrying in the same year another woman. So Hattie was pissed.
Yeah.
Because he was with another woman. So he is in jail. But then he must have bounced back pretty quick because he ends up marrying Annie Farnham, who is a part of another wealthy, well-to-do kind of family.
I just find it weird because I feel like we've done a lot of stories now where someone coming forward and saying he never married me would have done nothing.
Right.
And then on other hand, you're in prison. It's drastic how the justice system works.
I think he got bailed out. He got,
he had the money.
If you were a poor person and they said you weren't whatever, then you're kind of stuck wherever in that situation. But
just interesting.
He got some help after he got locked up. So then he marries Annie Farnham, and he does have children. So he names his son Levi Wilson Mowen Jr.
locks it in.
But it wasn't right away because I found the passport application for his son.
Oh, cool.
And
did it have a photo?
It had a photo of his son. And let me just pull it up here.
Imagine, Dad, what does my middle name mean?
No, it actually has a whole reasoning for why his name was changed.
That's awesome.
Go. Explanation of name change here.
Well, that's awesome.
Yep.
I can't wait to see. That's definitely something for that kid to pass, a story to pass down, at least in that aspect. It's a big old story.
Okay, so he's only 5'6", his son. He's got light blue eyes, straight hair, it has all of this. Talking about him, there's a nice picture. He's got a mustache like his dad, right?
It
says, I was born on July 31st, 1883 as Levi Wilson, my father being named I.E. Wilson and my mother living named Annie F. Farnham. My father's name was changed in 1889 when I was 6 years old, and I have been since known as Levi Mowen since then, and I have familiarity and known by as Levi W. Mowen Jr. My birth certificate reading Levi Wilson confirms my application for this passport respectfully. And then he signs it. So his dad changed his name in 1889 to further
lock him into the
family tree or trying to get because.
So would the dad? No, because the dad, the dad who raised him had already passed, but this Mowen, I wonder if at some point did he take. Just let it out of the bag that publicly that this is my son and that he felt.
Oh, no, never. I looked so, and never. Looked and looked, and he never said he was his son. In his, like, last will, his estate, they said that he had left somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million to protect his. They said it was a trust for Wilson, but it really wasn't. It was to protect his family, like his legitimate sons, that if he was to get, you know, bring them back to court, that money would be used for that. And if
there was
someone wrote in the newspaper that it was written that Philip Moen wrote in his will that if Wilson stayed out of prison for 20 years, then that money would be his. So,
I mean, we tried pretty hard to be pretty good to get all that money.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What was the whole, like, what was so publicly bad about it? Like, he just didn't want to ruin his
family? Oh, because he was, like, a very religious man. Yeah. He was a deacon. He was was very big in the establishment of several schools. So his name was with the WPI. All this, like,
His name would have been varnished.
Exactly. So it's not like politics nowadays where
politicians
so much songs going on. Pop up, children pop up everywhere, and nobody cares. They're like, great, good for you. Wow. Like,
that's crazy.
So,
but then you would also feel like if he was a religious person and he was a this person, that, like, he would feel obligated to want to fix that relationship or feel like I know he was giving him money, but maybe on the flip side, would he have wanted or should he have felt like he wanted to do more? Yeah. In the relationship.
I don't know.
It's weird.
He
we'll
definitely
never know. These dads will
lot,
never know.
A lot of his life and kept giving him money. And there were several articles where reporters were going to talk to his brothers, his sisters, to say, like, how do you feel about it? And they're like, oh, no, he was, like, one of us. He was named after my aunt's first husband. And the mother, during the time period where, like, the trials were taking place in, like I said, 1886. Mm-hmm. So his aunt said that his mother was not, like, she had dementia or something. Yeah. She couldn't really remember what was going on. So they couldn't interview her to say, yes, no, where did he come from, kind of a thing. But, yeah, they were trying to track down the doctors.
Jeez. But there was DNA. Never,
you know, and then there was talk about a safe that someone had broken into that stole the documentation that he had.
Man.
And so he told a lot of stories.
Wow.
So I didn't know who to believe. At, like, one point I was like, oh, yeah, he's definitely just pulling.
Trying to get
what
he can.
Why would Moen pay him so much money if there was no... like, truth behind something. Like, if it wasn't that he was his son, what was it?
Yeah, what happened?
Like, why? Maybe it was a business. Moen kept saying it's a business matter. It's not a familial matter. It's a business matter. So I'm like.
So maybe he knew something about.
His shady business deal? Like, did he witness him kill somebody?
And
like,
just, like, cover it up
like
with
what?
The trials? I don't know. It seems weird.
It's really weird. So, yeah. So they ended up saying that the first trial was deadlocked, and then the second one was Wilson had brought Moen to court saying he owed him more money, and they were like, and then the jury was like, no, you don't, you're not getting any more money right from him anymore. So he stays, you know, out of trouble for a whole year, and then Annie files for divorce because, you know,
he's not bringing in the money.
No, not just that. He, like, literally abandoned her.
Yeah.
So he's imprisoned again in 1887 because he's failing to
provide.
Yep. Abandonment kind of stuff. And then I found an article from 1887, April 4th. He was actually at the Dorrance Hotel. You know where that is, right? In Providence, right?
I've heard of the Dorrance. I just don't know if I could pinpoint it.
He actually attempted suicide with laudanum, and he ended up calling somebody when he was still conscious, and then, like, the doctors attended to him, but he was telling them to just let him die. And
are you serious?
Yeah. So that article reads, Wilson's despair. So Phil Moen's tormentor takes a heavy dose of laudanum in April. Yeah.
And at this point, he hadn't been receiving money.
Right.
So was he poor? Like, did he have enough to sustain himself? Like, or was he now just so depressed and had not any money?
He must have gotten something. He ended up in New Jersey.
Okay.
At some point. And he ends up married in Texas, though, before that. So in 1891, he marries Lilias May Bonham in Grayson County, Texas, in October of 1891. He actually has children with her as well.
Okay.
So it looks like two or three. Someone says three, but I only see Harley Wilson Moen and then Levi Wilson Moen. So he keeps the name, the
Wilson
middle name.
Moen.
He keeps the middle name Wilson. But so there's lots of trials, lots of marriages, lots of money back and forth. But he declares bankruptcy in 1901.
Aw.
And then a divorce again.
Oh, no.
In 1911. Jeez. From Lily's. Yep. So I think it was abandonment. And he ended up, so Philip Moen died in 1891.
Okay.
So he, on his, like, his will and testament didn't leave him specifically anything.
Oh, okay.
But he kept saying, like, I'm owed this, I'm his son, give me my, like, $500,000, like, I need this, give me that. And the family never.
So it does come out to the family.
Yeah, like everybody. It's in everyone, the papers. Everybody.
Right, so anyone ended up knowing. So this, the guy who was giving all the money, he kind of put himself in a terrible situation because he was out all that money. Plus, it didn't even really keep the secret.
Right. I don't know if that was even the secret, though.
Right, right, because it could have been something more.
Worse? Was he just appeasing newspapers? But
right. Did the, and yeah.
This one really was like a head scratcher.
Did the dad, Wilson, the dad who did the deathbed confession.
Jonas, yeah.
Did he have any, could he have crossed paths with the other dad? Like, did they work together at one point? Like,
there were sayings because he ran the stagecoach that he would go up to Worcester sometimes from Connecticut, and so their paths could have crossed because he was running a stage for Moen.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's like at that moment, what possesses someone to like just confess that, right? Because had he not,
right,
this person would have just carried on normal-ish, I would say. And then,
yep.
But then on the other hand, did he really feel like he needed to know the reason? And I wonder for the son's sake, if the son ever regretted hearing it. I know we don't know that, but like, I wonder if he regrets just, why did I ever get told this?
Or was he even told that? Like, was he
true,
just like,
making,
he saw someone, like, he was a stable boy before this.
Interesting.
Before this whole like
debacle.
Yeah. This 1870, whatever happened then. And then he just showed up at a bank and was getting money. And was like helping family members, giving thousands of dollars here, there, everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
Traveling. He was said he's gone to Paris and he's told.
Oh my gosh.
He said he'd been all over the world. And who knows if it was true. He was like the Count of Monte Cristo, you know? the guy who like was in jail and then came back for his revenge. You know, so.
Oh, that's the part that we'll never get to really know.
You can make it up, I guess.
make your own hypothesis.
Yeah. But I'll show you the building, the Wilson Hotel. So this is the original.
Oh, cool.
And they called it the Windsor after a while. And now it actually still stands.
Oh, wow.
And
so it's still got the
same
shape.
It's the Savers Bank. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
They were going to tear it down. And then some friend of, like, the, like, family had reached out about the bank helping to keep it, so
wow,
it's still intact.
Yeah, so look, like it has the same like foundation in
yeah,
a sense.
It has, it looks the same to me. I was like, wow, that's really, really interesting.
That's
it
awesome.
Lasted this long. There was a picture of the inside of the dining room in like the 40s, and
oh,
it was
cool,
like all really cool.
So imagine just
postcards.
Sitting there now knowing the story and
yeah,
how.
I wish it was still like operating like a hotel or a restaurant.
That's
I would
awesome.
Totally go and see. But I don't know. This one really, really grabbed me, and I...
Kudos to you, because that took me on a little bit of a whirlwind.
I couldn't keep track of everything all at once sometimes.
Especially with reading and finding more articles
yeah.
and getting more information. It's just, like, overwhelming.
Yeah. He was spending a lot of money.
That's crazy. I love that. I mean, not for the family. I mean, I'm sure that was rather an interesting time, but...
And
it's crazy.
One article said that he lived in New Jersey, like, after all this happened, and He had a big house there too, and he actually lived on 25 Moen Place, which was like,
oh.
And you look, and there's a street in New Jersey called Moen.
Was it named after him?
Yeah. So I was like, is this really, like, he must have had that much money,
power
still,
or
and,
just
like
influence.
Yeah. He just could get anybody to believe whatever. And even on the deathbed, like, the hospital was like, oh, this is that guy? this is Doc Wilson? Because
Wow. They
couldn't, they were like, he said his name and it had
they
been a few
a different
years
thing.
Yeah, because he died in 1922.
Wow.
So he was, his body remained unclaimed at the hospital for a while.
Really?
Yeah, and I couldn't find like a gravestone, but he is buried in New Jersey. So
Wow. You
could, I could call the
and find out more information.
Yeah.
Good one, Michelle.
Thanks. I might do a little more digging, see if I can find an 1850 census to see if Jonas's family was in Worcester area.
Yeah,
like,
that'd be cool to
because
see.
Because in 1853, it's like in that middle time.
Yeah.
Like, how do we piece them together to be in that
connecting
area?
Connecting together.
Because why would every single census after that say, every child was born in Connecticut, except
right,
for
him.
Levi. He was born
and
in Mass.
And I feel like, should the mom have gone and had a fling, say?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't going super far. How was she getting there? Or was
right.
he coming here? I don't know.
The mother wasn't listed on there. So, like, who is the mother?
True. Because she died.
Yeah, maybe. But she died earlier that year. Did they lie about the birthday record? Was he born January 1st instead of December 1st?
Oy, oy, oy.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
January 1st would have been perfect because she passed away of consumption, it says, on January 5th, 1853. So that was my guess. I was like,
unless he had some weird, Moen had some weird reason or partaking in the wife's death or something, and then that was the way of the dad confessing and causing issues. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So many different hypotheses.
If you're going to do a deathbed confession, make sure you give all the explanations.
Right? And keep all the documentation. And
so that no one is wondering any questions in the future. I can't even imagine.
Because I feel like if he had that, he would have brought it to court, don't you?
Yeah.
And been like, see, this is
yeah, like actual
here.
Proof, and then
yeah.
boom, it's case is closed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know.
It's a weird one.
Well, I had a great time with this one.
Me too. Next
and
week is natural disasters.
Yep, I said I was inspired by watching Twisters.
Yeah.
So
we'll be digging into that, and maybe I can get a update on this one if I find
yeah,
anything
that'd be great.
Extra.
Love it. So yeah, so if you have any stories to share like this one, definitely reach out to us. And remember, it's not a matter of if you will find a shadow in your family tree, but when, because behind every family tree, there are shadows.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.